You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So much for the formula. Less than 24 hours after our very optimistic postgame episode following Wednesday's 136-118 record-setting win over the Wizards, the Rockets hitting 26 three-pointers, which has never been done in a game before in NBA history, the Rockets not only had their five-game winning streak snapped on the second half of the back-to-back Thursday night in Miami, but they lost Chris Paul as well for the foreseeable future with a re-aggravation of his strained left hamstring. So not only does the loss end the winning streak and drop the Rockets to 16-15 on the season, but with a tough week coming up, starting with the Spurs on Saturday night, it feels like the Rockets may have lost a lot more than just one basketball game. On that unfortunate note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily postgame commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat late this Thursday evening, as stated off the top, the five-game winning streak, it's history. The Heat beat the Rockets in a nationally televised game on TNT in Miami, 101-99. The Rockets were led by 35 points and 12 assists from James Harden, who played 43 minutes, shot just 7 of 23 from the field. He's understandably a bit tired after carrying the load for the past week and had to play, as mentioned, 43 minutes because with Chris Paul playing only 12, leaving with that hamstring injury, the Rockets were put behind the eight ball in a very difficult spot in this game. Despite having so many things go against them, the defensive rebounding issues that have been plaguing them all season long were there and then some tonight. With Hassan Whiteside leading the way for the Heat, they out-rebounded Houston 62-41. Despite that, somehow, the Rockets still had the ball down by two in the closing seconds, got an open look at a three from Eric Gordon that would have won the game, and he clanked it. Eric did shoot 5 of 13 from the field, but overall 6 of 17. Even though he had 20 points, his efficiency not where it needs to be. And in some ways, it's fitting because our episode earlier today, if you listened to it, our recap of the Wizards game on Wednesday night, talked about how it wasn't just the win, it wasn't setting the record, but it was the return to form of Chris Paul and Eric Gordon and giving James Harden some help. The secondary playmakers, Chris Paul certainly at an all-star level, Eric Gordon at least a year ago was close to that, especially early on in the season. This year, neither one of them has been close to their expected levels of play. Eric Gordon heading into last night was below 40% from the field and below 30% from three. Chris Paul about 41%, 35% from three. Last night, two of them both above 50% from the field, exactly 50% from three. It was the kind of feel-good performance you want because unlike Monday night's win over Utah when James Harden just was out of this world, it felt more sustainable. Unfortunately, just one night later, it went back to the familiar storyline of James Harden, even being inefficient, 7 of 23. Now, he did struggle inside the arc. He was 6 of 14 from 3, just 1 of 9 inside the arc. Give a lot of credit to the Heat, their interior presence, we mentioned, led by Hassan Whiteside. They won the rebounding battle 62-41. You do credit the opponent. Also, the Rockets headed into this game, second night of a back-to-back. They had a long plane flight, got into Miami at about 2:30 local time this morning, as opposed to the Heat, who came into this game with 3 days of rest. So there were a lot of extenuating circumstances to this one. The Heat, coached by Eric Spoelstra, I thought also had a great game plan. So no, it's not all on the Rockets. But with Harden, he made his shots from three. Inside the arc, they were tougher to come by, especially in the fourth quarter when he took what looked like a hard hit on a fall. Just, I don't know if he was concussed. I think that would be reckless to speculate, but certainly took a hard shot to his head. Did not quite look the same afterward, not nearly as aggressive. And outside of James, a lot of the veterans that had been carrying the load of late, all of a sudden it felt like they ran out of gas. And to some extent, that's understandable. Again, the Heat having 3 days off, the Rockets entering on the second night of a back-to-back, and a third and four-night stretch. P.J. Tucker going into the game, he had made 11 of his last 20 from three for the Rockets. Tonight, he was just 3 of 11 from behind the arc, 5 of 14 overall. Clint Capela had 14 rebounds, but in his 29 minutes, he was a team-worst minus 12. Thought he was clearly outplayed by Hassan Whiteside, who had 18 boards. Eric Gordon, as mentioned earlier, 6 of 17 from the field. He was decent from 3, 5 of 13, did have a 3 that cut the lead to 2, and ultimately when the Rockets got a stop, got them a shot, but he missed what was a pretty good look for the win, and on the balance of the game, 6 of 17 just simply is not good enough. When you're in a difficult scheduling situation, you like to think that maybe that's a situation where the bench can pick you up. Unfortunately, that did not happen. The hashtag greenhouse effect was not really in effect tonight. Daniel House, in his 18 minutes, was a minus 11. Gerald Green was 2 of 7, 1 of 6 from 3. A night after he went 4 of 7, Gerald was a minus 8 in the plus-minus. Brandon Knight got by far the most time of his comeback. He had been limited to single digits so far with the injury to Chris Paul. He got to 18, but he scored just 3 points, went 1 of 5 from the field. Nene was pretty fresh in his 19 minutes. The Rockets were a plus 10 with him on the field and with or on the court, and Nene's fresh legs, it felt like, gave them more than Capella. Perhaps Nene should have gone a little bit more than 19 and Capella a bit less than 29, given the differences in their energy. But honestly, we're nitpicking at this point. The bottom line is the Rockets, once they lost Chris Paul, they just did not have enough to beat a rested Miami team on the road. The Rockets played well early. They were up by 16. They did what you want to do. I don't think that the Rockets took this game lightly. It's not the Heat are a bad team at 14 and 16 by any means, but when you're in the situation the Rockets were in with the scheduling difficulties and before even knowing about the Chris Paul injury, the best thing you can do is play in front. The Rockets, they executed early. They went up by as much as 16 in the first half. And when you're in that situation, that's all you can do because you know you're probably going to run out of gas as the game moves along. And ultimately, that's what happened. I don't think the Rockets didn't take this game seriously. I disagreed with some of Mike D'Antoni's coaching decisions. I could not believe that they didn't hack Hassan Whiteside a bit more in the fourth quarter after he was 1 of 4, but the 3 free throws he missed, I mean, they were nowhere close. I wish they had done that more down the stretch. But honestly, the Rockets, it's hard to fault their effort. I don't think that they got lackadaisical with a lead. I think they knew going in that third game in 4 nights, second of a back-to-back, long plane flight that got them to their hotel at about 3 a.m. local time. No one's really rested. The recipe for the Rockets to win this game was to play from in front. They took care of business early. They were up 33-21 after the first quarter. Unfortunately, between the tired legs and the absence of Chris Paul, they didn't have enough to hold on. So, in the grand scheme, I think a lot of this is understandable. When you look at the guys who struggle, James Harden, 7 of 23, Eric Gordon, 6 of 17, PJ Tucker, 5 of 14, these are guys who have carried an awful heavy load of late. And in the case of Harden and Gordon, certainly the shots inside the arc, when you have guys like Whiteside, James Johnson, the length that the Heat can throw at you, and a very good defensive coach in Eric Spoelstra, and then the absence of Chris Paul, it's understandable. It's what they call in the NBA a schedule loss. The frustration is when you start 1-5, 11-14, like the Rockets did this season, it makes the schedule losses a lot worse. To overcome what the Rockets did to start this season, you need to steal a game like this here or there. This was a great opportunity, and the Rockets let it slide. The other part of it, of course, is because of not just that they lost, but how it happened, losing Chris Paul. It seems to be a very ominous cloud hanging over this team for the foreseeable future, and it comes at a really awful time, just 24 hours after I think all of us were as optimistic as we've been about them in a long while. More on that in just a moment. So as we continue our Thursday night recap of the 101-99 loss the Rockets suffered in Miami on Thursday night, a lot of what went wrong was scheduling factors and the rebounding deficiency that's plagued the Rockets all season long. They're one of the bottom 5 defensive rebounding teams. The Heat out-rebounded them 62-41, and they had 20 on the offensive glass. So this was not a good matchup for the Rockets, and then you factor in it's their second game of a back-to-back, not getting a lot of sleep, 3rd and 4 nights, the Heat entering off of 3 days rest. And this is something that, from a scheduling perspective, happens over 82 games in the NBA. It is what it is. And if it were just that, I think you'd be able to turn the page pretty easily. What's going to be difficult is, number one, the Rockets know they can't throw away games after the start to the year. Even with them having won 5 of their last 6 games, they're now just 1 game over 500 at 16-15, given the disappointing start that we've been discussing ad nauseum the last few weeks. And the other issue, the extremely ominous cloud that's now hanging over the Rockets for the foreseeable future is the hamstring injury to Chris Paul. Mike D'Antoni said after the game that it'll be some time, and he's going to have an MRI tomorrow. Based on how he was walking, I'd be a bit surprised if it was a grade 2. He didn't seem to have quite the same limp that he did after Game 5 of the Western Conference Finals. So my guess is that you're talking about probably a couple of weeks rather than a month. But any hamstring injury is minor. And the trouble with Chris, it's a re-aggravation. First, in late November, that was when he missed 3 consecutive games. They called it rest. Then they called it a sore leg. Eventually, we did get from Mike D'Antoni that, it was something like a hamstring. It took him a while to say those words. I think the Rockets are extremely sensitive with that, given Chris's history. We all know how it ended in the Western Conference Finals a year ago. Now, it's not that hamstring. That was the right. This is the left. The problem with it being the left is that we also know from when he missed those 3 games about 3 weeks ago, that was also the left. So the problem with this, it's a re-aggravation of a hamstring that was already in a weakened, diminished state. And it's reminiscent of James Ennis, who re-aggravated the strained hamstring, and that's why he's out for the time being, and there's no exact timetable for his return. So even if it's not a particularly severe strain, and he seemed to be walking certainly better than after the grade 2 strain that he suffered in the Western Conference Finals, that was to his right hamstring against the Warriors, any re-aggravation is very, very troubling, because that's the one injury that is so, so easy to re-aggravate and to linger. Just ask Kiki Kuti with the Texans, who has been in and out of the lineup all season long for 4 months with the same recurrence of the identical hamstring issue. That is what's so concerning about this. No, it's not the same hamstring as the playoffs a year ago. No, I don't think the MRI is going to turn up anything particularly bad. But even if we're just talking about a grade 1 or grade 1 plus hamstring strain, this isn't James Harden, who's in his 20s, and you can bring him back after 10 days or so, and all of a sudden he's going to be okay. No, this is a 33-year-old Chris Paul with a reaggravation of a hamstring that, even though it took a while for D'Antoni to confirm it, we pretty much know was already having issues about 3 weeks ago. So when it's not just a typical hamstring, but one that has already had prior issues, it's concerning. And for a Rockets team that really all season long has had issues with depth, then losing one of your 2 stars, it's debilitating. It's really tough. We've seen this team fall off a cliff even when the likes of Gerald Green missed some time. And now you're talking about Chris Paul. It's rough. There are some things they can do about it. We'll talk about that in the third segment. But for now, I do think we need to acknowledge that there's not really a tactical adjustment you can make. The Rockets aren't as good defensively as they were a year ago. They've been a bottom 5, bottom 10 team all year long. What they need, if they are going to contend, and the schedule is hellacious for the near future, is to be an elite enough offensive team to overcome their issues with defense and rebounding. And that's what they've generally been for the past month. Even though their defense hasn't really improved that much since moving on from Carmelo Anthony in mid-November, their offense has been far away number 1 in the league, and last night scored 136 points, an NBA record, 26 threes. That's why I said, that's the formula. When you have an offense that great, not just number 1, but if Chris Paul and Eric Gordon start getting going the way they were a night ago, then you can see an offense that's already the best in the league becoming historically elite. That's your ticket, if you're the Rockets, in terms of how you overcome your issues with defense and rebounding that are more personnel-based. And with defense, of course, it's not just personnel. I think to some degree, the switching scheme, NBA offense is adjusted to what they were doing a year ago, and now it's going to take time for the Rockets to figure out what the counter to that is. Maybe the answer can only be found in terms of personnel. We'll have to wait and see. But this current winning streak by the Rockets, the defense had gotten a little bit better, but by and large, it was because the offense just went to an astronomical level, especially the case against the Wizards, and if Chris Paul isn't out there, it can help a little bit if James Harden, Eric Gordon, PJ Tucker aren't running on fumes the way they were in this game, but I just don't know that the Rockets have the horses to survive against the upcoming schedule, because when you look at the next 10-plus days for the Rockets, the Spurs, they host them on Saturday night. That's a very rejuvenated San Antonio team that's playing really well. Then Oklahoma City on Christmas, who appears to be the best team in the Western Conference at the moment. You've got Boston 2 days after that. Then at New Orleans, home for Memphis, at Golden State. Of all the stretches that you could lose Chris Paul, this is about the worst. And it's not that I think the Rockets are psychologically in a bad place. I think by and large, the progress they've made through the 5-game winning streak, even though it was sapped Thursday night, this is a game that on paper you look at even with the Heat still below 500 by a bit, it's a potential schedule loss. It's understandable, and even the guys who underachieve, I know it's easy to poke fun at the likes of Eric Gordon, but look, the schedule is tough. Eric made 5 threes, James made 6 of his 14, PJ Tucker played through issues with his groin and his calf, went 38 minutes, had 14 points, 7 boards. The Rockets wanted it. They took the game seriously. The schedule is just hard. It's just the double whammy of losing a game, which was winnable. They were 1 Eric Gordon 3 from somehow getting the ultimate and feel-good wins. And now you take the double whammy of losing a game, having the winning streak snapped, and then losing Chris Paul with your schedule all of a sudden going from the likes of the Wizards and the Heat. Really, you go back to the Jazz. The Rockets have played 3 consecutive below 500 teams. Now, I don't think that's reflective of who the Jazz are as a team. I think they're much better than 500, what they showed Monday night. But regardless, now you're going up a weight class. The Spurs, and especially the Thunder, the Celtics on the road in New Orleans, then the Grizzlies at Golden State. It's tough for me to envision a scenario, even if the MRI is the best-case result, that sees Chris Paul coming back in under 2 weeks, simply based on the fact that A, it's a hamstring, which is notoriously tricky, and B, he's 33 years old, and it's a recurrence of the same hamstring that we know at least had a minor tweak only 2 to 3 weeks ago. I think the best case scenario, even if the MRI is fairly optimistic, and at this point I don't see any reason to think it's going to be particularly bad, but when you combine losing this game, dropping the Rockets to just 1 game over 500, then with the upcoming schedule, without Chris Paul, I'm not going to say it's impossible. Whenever you have James Harden, you have a chance. But boy, is it a lot to ask. And it just comes at a really rotten time because Chris Paul on Wednesday, he had one of his better games of the year, 21-8, 7 of 11 from the field, 5 of 9 from 3. Things were looking so good for him. Had 4 assists in just the first 12 minutes on Thursday night in Miami, and just in an open court situation, it's a fluke issue. And I have a tough time blaming Mike D'Antoni for this. I've seen some saying his minutes are extended. He's been playing 34 minutes per game to this point in the season. Well, there's a couple of things. First, it's very early. There's time to bring that down. And secondly, even if you look at it, a year ago, Paul was averaging 31.8 minutes. Now he's averaging 34.0. I have a tough time getting up in arms about an increase of 2.2 minutes per game that's 30 games into the season. I think it's a combination of bad luck and scheduling because his body was already in a weakened state, and then you factor in the tough back-to-back, a lack of sleep. Now, maybe you can say the Rockets should have been more aggressive. They sat out Nene in one part of this back-to-back, I think in large part because of those reasons. He's 36 years old. Maybe they should have done the same thing with the 33-year-old Chris Paul. I think it's fair if you want to criticize D'Antoni or the Rockets management for not being more proactive and sitting him on one part of the back-to-back. I think, especially with the winning streak, maybe they were a little bit greedy. I think it's fair to wonder about that. But I don't think playing 34.0 minutes per game, which was Chris's average entering tonight, relative to 31.8 a season ago, and trying to draw some correlation, I don't think 2.2 minutes per game over 30 games, not even 30 in the case of Chris Paul, is really anything. We're talking about 25 games with CP that accounts for a hamstring injury. It's a combination of scheduling, bad luck, and if anything, I would say not appreciating the rigors of this particular back-to-back with a long plane flight of Houston to Miami in between. If you want to criticize anything, I would say that, but above all else, I don't think there's any one thing that would have prevented it. I think it's just crappy, rotten luck, but unfortunately it comes at a rough time because not only do the Rockets lose this game, which in isolation, you'd say, well, it's a schedule loss. They've won 5 of 6. You feel pretty good. But now, I don't really see Chris coming back all that soon. And if he doesn't come back, do the Rockets have enough offense to offset their limitations on the defensive end of the floor? We'll talk about that in the third and final segment of our recap. To finish up Thursday evening's show, our recap of the 101-99 loss the Rockets suffered in Miami on Thursday night. We're not talking too much about the game because really I think a lot of the circumstances are just circumstantial to borrow a cliche. I know the Rockets, they should be a better team than Miami, but Houston on the third game in 4 nights, second of a back-to-back, got into Miami at 2:30 local time. The Heat hadn't played in several days. The Heat, a strong defensive rebounding team. They out-rebounded Houston. That's their weakness, 62-41. It's a bad matchup. The Rockets were tired. The Heat were fresh. Eric Spoelstra is a good coach. And even with all that, the Rockets lost by 2 points and were within an open Eric Gordon three at the buzzer from having six consecutive wins. So in a vacuum, I'm not too down on it. The reason I'm down on it is a double whammy of losing a winnable game that could have kept your momentum going and now entering perhaps the most difficult stretch of your schedule all season long without Chris Paul, who, with a re-aggravation of a hamstring strain and Chris Paul being 33 years old, you know that even the best case scenario, we're talking a couple of weeks. We're not talking a couple of games. It's going to be a while. And for the Rockets, the question is, how do you get your defense, your depth, to a suitable level to offset the loss of Chris Paul? Because the formula has been offense to this point. What's made the Rockets and their 2 5-game winning streaks has been when their offense has really gotten going at an elite level. That's been with Chris Paul leading the way. I believe they're 0-5 this year in games that Chris Paul has missed altogether. And, well, you can add another loss Thursday night, even though he played just 12 minutes, and the Rockets were outscored by 10 after he left the game. And what was as much as a 16-point lead early in the game when Chris Paul played ultimately became a loss, snapping that 5-game losing streak and dropping the Rockets to 16-15 on the year. And I could maybe understand an argument that if the MRI comes back extremely positive, and given how difficult it can be to throw in players on the fly, that if you really, really believe you can get him back in 10 to 14 days, and considering the parity of the Western Conference with teams so jam-packed that even a couple of losses, it's not like they're going to drop you all that far, maybe you can stick with the status quo, in part because if you bring in someone, be it a free agent signing or a trade, you probably have to put them through a couple of practices before you'd really feel comfortable throwing them on the floor for major minutes. But even just a couple of weeks, certainly given the magnitude of the opponents, and if there's any thought that it could be longer than that, and with hamstrings, I don't see that you can rule anything out. I don't know how the Rockets can't look at external options. One that jumps out to me, and I know there's a backstory in terms of his history with the team, the incident at Staples Center last year, but Austin Rivers, look, this is a guard who a year ago averaged 15 points a game, was a quality on-ball defender, and right now is unemployed. This is someone you could conceivably sign for the minimum that's just waiting for the call. And with Chris Paul out, there are minutes to be had. Maybe it's not Austin Rivers. Maybe they have to look elsewhere. And in fairness, I mentioned that Rivers was a very good player, or at least a solid player, a year ago. He has not been good at all this season. A player efficiency rating of barely over 7, shooting below 40% from the field and barely above 30% from 3. Now, since he's 26 years old, I find it hard to believe that Rivers has fallen off that dramatically from when he averaged 15 points a game in 33 minutes with the Clippers a year ago, shooting nearly 38% from 3. At the same time, if you don't want Austin, there are other options out there. But with Houston, all season long, we have seen depth as an issue, and that's just with minor absences, like what's happened with Gerald Green for a few games, or Nene for the first month of the season. Even bit pieces like that have caused significant dents in the Rockets' rotation when they exit. And now you're talking about a Hall of Famer that's been averaging 34 minutes per game and taking them out just as the Rockets hit the toughest part of their schedule. Look, I understand that it's a bitter pill to swallow, and it feels like we're doing a whole, 180-degree turn in terms of our mood about the team. We were so positive after the Wizards game, the record-setting threes, everything appearing so positive, but that's the way things can go in the NBA. I mean, look at the Western Conference Finals. I'm not saying that it's that dramatic, but everything was great through 5 games, and all it takes is one tweak of a hamstring, and that can change everything. So even though it feels like it's just one game, nothing has really changed that much. A lot of what happened against the Heat was not so much the Rockets doing anything wrong or anything that people should be ashamed of, just a rough stretch scheduling-wise. Okay, well, you've got a really rough stretch scheduling-wise coming up, and now you don't have Chris Paul. So it's tough for me to imagine. Maybe it's not Austin Rivers. Maybe it's another guard. Maybe it's a swingman in which it frees you up more Gerald Green in the backcourt, which is something they did in the Western Conference Finals. Once Chris went out, I really don't think Brandon Knight is ready to play 20-plus minutes per game at this point. He had been in the single digits. They stretched him out to 18 Thursday in Miami, just 1 of 5 from the field, and still appears to have a lot of rust to knock off. The Rockets have an open roster spot right now. At this point, I don't see how you don't look at other alternatives. I'm not saying it has to be Austin Rivers. That's just one that jumps out to me this week because he plays a position of need, and he's a fairly accomplished player, still in his 20s, who now happens to be available. But if there are chemistry issues there, if you want to look somewhere else, I'm open to that. But for a Rockets team that still has trust issues, even with Chris Paul going out, Michael Carter-Williams still got, even with the record-setting three the other night, at DMP CD in Miami, Marquise Chris, Gary Clark, it's clear they're out of the rotation for right now. Isaiah Hartenstein is bouncing back and forth between the G League. The Rockets have too many combinations of prospects, or just guys, in the case of MCW, Chris, Carmelo Anthony, who is still occupying a roster spot, who are giving them zero production. So even when the Rockets were at full strength, they had at most, you know, a nine-man rotation, and it felt like that if you lost even one, things could fall off a cliff, not just in terms of the defense, the offense, but just the sheer depth. And with Eric Gordon now in the starting lineup, making that become an issue again. Well, now you're taking out one of your two marquee starters, averaging 34 minutes per game. I know there have been a lot of good vibes lately. I just don't see how you make up for that, especially with the upcoming schedule, Spurs, Thunder, Celtics, Pelicans, Grizzlies, Warriors. I don't see how everything gets solved internally. I hope I'm wrong, but to me, unless there's a misnomer with what we know about the Chris Paul injury diagnosis and with hamstrings, I don't think there is. To me, this is a situation where the Rockets have to look externally, and hopefully tomorrow or Saturday, at the very least, between the two off days, maybe it's not by Saturday, maybe it's Sunday and Monday, the Rockets, given this brutal stretch scheduling-wise, they're going to take Friday off altogether, no practice. Maybe they want to stay the course for the time being since there's no practice tomorrow, and then Saturday, the 22nd against the Spurs, play it as is. The Spurs, of the teams you're playing, are the weakest, especially defensively. Maybe Harden can save you that game, but you have 2 days off after the Spurs game before Christmas, Sunday the 23rd, Monday the 24th, they'll get in at least one practice then. To me, that's an opportune time, assuming the Chris Paul injury is as significant as I think it is, at least a couple of weeks, to work in a new part. At this point, with the Rockets having an open roster spot, no, they don't need it desperately for Daniel House. His two-way is not up until January. I don't see how the Rockets don't look for another option at this point. It's a brutal pill in a season that's already been full of plenty of those, but unfortunately, the Rockets at this point, 16-15, with Chris Paul and the contract that he is, you just have to make the best of it. You can't afford a lost season at this juncture. You've got to just try and survive as best you can. And for the Rockets to survive, given the schedule and the fact that they're only one game over 500 entering this tough stretch, yeah, they're probably going to have to look externally. I don't know if the question is so much when, but who at this point. And as far as the answer to that, stay tuned. Again, I'm not so sure it comes tomorrow, because they don't really have a practice, but my guess, by Sunday or Monday, if the news on Chris is as unfortunate as it seems, with a hamstring injury, I'd say that's 99% certain, then I don't know how the Rockets don't look to fill that roster spot, at least on a temporary basis for the next 10 days or so, with another body that they can trust, because I just don't think that you can throw Brandon Knight into a 25-minute-per-game role at this point and expect him to hold up against the competition that they are about to face. So with that, we'll wrap up our two-episode day of Locked on Rockets. Apologize for the wild swing in mood, but well, when you go from a record-setting day with 26 made threes against the Heat to losing Chris Paul and losing the winning streak against Miami, the winning streak came against the Wizards in the record, then of course the loss Thursday night against the Heat, getting a little tongue-tied there, but regardless, it's been a wild swing in emotion, really just like this entire season, so we should be used to it. From starting 1-5 to the 5-game winning streak, 8-10, the 4-game losing streaks, losing 7-9, and the 5-game winning streak, then losing Chris Paul and the ballgame, we've been bouncing back and forth all year, so what's one more wild swing to add to the mix? Anyway, as I said at the beginning, for better or for worse, for coverage of this team and all the wild swings that come with it, this is your home for that. Locked on Rockets, we have daily episodes. No matter what's going on, we are the only daily home for podcast commentary on Houston Rockets basketball. And if you want even more than daily commentary, best place to get it, of course, is on Twitter. Whenever news leaks from Chris Paul's MRI on Friday, that's where I'll break it. I'll be on there at Ben Dubose, simply my name. The show is on there at Locked on Rockets. And you can also check out Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and Instagram. That's a curated feed with hosts across the Locked On Podcast Network, local experts across the NBA. In addition to the NBA, we also have local experts across the NFL, Major League Baseball, college sports, and that's what enables us to have a great distribution platform, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, so on and so forth. We're also working with voice network partners, so if you say for your voice networks, play podcast Locked On Rockets, that's where you can find us. the strength of that collective Lockdown Podcast Network gives us a lot of advantages. So subscribe to us. You can find us wherever you listen to your podcast based on that distribution partnership. And if you subscribe, you leave 5-star reviews. That's how we look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Lockdown Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. The same goes for Lockdown Texans, our sister show across town, where they are the only daily podcast covering the 10-4, the much more successful at the moment Houston Texans of the NFL. So subscribe, leave 5-star reviews, and that's how you keep the business model rolling. Even better than that, if you're interested in becoming a potential sponsor yourself and reaching our rapidly growing audience, best way to do that, get in contact with me, lockdownrockets@gmail.com. Email me. We've got great introductory specials for our advertisers. And even if you're not an advertiser, you want to ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, that email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, is an awesome way to get in touch with me. Once again, the unhappy final for Miami Thursday night. Heat 101, Rockets 99. The 5-game winning streak is history, and the Rockets fall 216-15 on the year. More importantly, though, Chris Paul re-aggravates his left hamstring and appears out for the foreseeable future, with the Rockets facing one of the more difficult scheduling stretches of the year coming up. Spurs on Saturday night, then the Thunder on Christmas, and the Celtics, the Pelicans on the road, the Grizzlies at Golden State, all in the week or so following Christmas. So on that unfortunate note, thanks as always for listening, but please come back this weekend for more analysis, hopefully for better when the Rockets have their state rivalry game against the Spurs on Saturday night. Whatever happens, come back after the game and check out more episodes and post-game recaps right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.